Hi, and welcome to the Good Health Podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Good, a registered nutritional therapy practitioner and functional medicine practitioner. Join me as we explore thyroid, brain, and fatigue conditions with positivity. From Hashimoto's to multiple sclerosis, chronic fatigue to adrenal dysfunction, I've got you covered. With expert advice and tips to help you take action now and inspiring real patient stories from successful individuals who refuse to let their health hold them back. Start your journey to good health today. And don't forget to come and join the conversation on Instagram at good_health. That's G-O-O-D-E. Or visit my website at nicolegoodhealth.com to find out more. Today, I'm very excited to be welcoming Dr. Maggie Yu onto the Good Health Podcast. Dr. Maggie is a medical MD. She's a functional medicine practitioner. She had a highly respected family practice and a certified functional medicine physician. She graduated from UCLA School of Medicine and has been practicing for over 25 years. She's an author, a mother, a teacher, a speaker, and a thought leader. Dr. Maggie has become a force to be reckoned with in the world of functional medicine, and her journey has been anything but ordinary. After developing mystery autoimmune symptoms postpartum and being diagnosed with an autoimmune disease at 36, Dr. Maggie personally suffered from a range of chronic conditions, including fibromyalgia, early menopause, Hashimoto's, chronic pain, depression, TMJ, and mixed connective tissue disorder. Battling her own debilitating health challenges, she recognized the limitations of conventional medicine. This profound personal experience became a catalyst for a career-altering deep dive into alternative methods of healing. She's a visionary in the field of functional medicine, and her transformative approach combines the best of medical knowledge with holistic care. Dr. Maggie has proven to be a beacon of hope for countless others suffering with similar afflictions. She goes beyond treating symptoms to targeting the root causes of health challenges to bring about lasting change. In today's episode, we are going to be deep diving into her story, into conventional and functional medicine, into where functional medicine comes into its own. We're also going to dig into autoimmunity, autoimmune diseases, and specifically, we're going to take a look at POTS. Let's jump straight into the conversation. Hi, Maggie. Welcome to the Good Health Podcast. And thank you for giving up your time today to join me. It's great to have you here.
Wonderful to be here. Excited as heck.
Good. So I already knew of your work before we arranged for you to come on the podcast. But still, I sort of sat down to look at some of the things that you do and some of the topics that we could discuss. And honestly, there's just so much that we could talk about today. We both work in autoimmunity. And it's such a complex area. There's so many conditions that come under that as well. We could never fit everything into one episode. It would be mad. So we'll have to get you back on at some time to talk about something else. But what I'd really love to start talking about is your journey, because I know so many of the practitioners that I speak to, especially I think within the functional medicine world, have ended up here through our own health experiences. That's certainly the case for me. I know most people, I think I've only had one practitioner on so far where that's not been the case for them. And it does give us a really unique connection, I think, with our patients, because we can relate to what they've, what they're going through and the system. And I actually had a quote here from your book, and you said, after a decade of telling patients that labs were normal and there was not much I could do, I became the sick patient that nobody could explain. Mm. And I think that's really fascinating. I think it's a brilliant quote there. So tell us a little bit about your story and how you got into functional medicine side of things from the conventional medicine.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me on, and thank you for asking me to share this story. For me, I mean, I went to one of the top medical schools in the country, in the United States, which is UCLA, graduated top of my class. And I came out as a idealistic, and I wanted to be a healer and I wanted to be a family practitioner. And I did that for the first, decade of my career. But I think signs of something gone awry really was within my first year of practice, because I think I talk about my book, but I also going to point out is that there are certain times when women go through some really hormonally vulnerable times that really, I call it like when there's big hormone swings, whether it's really up fast, low fast, or just a flux of it, right? So after the birth of my first child, I developed severe mastitis, which is an infection in the breast, and then it turned into antibiotics and then a C. diff infection for the next 18 months. And if people know who are in the medical community know, a C. diff infection sucks. It's awful. And it's very resistant to antibiotics. And so it really started a cascade of multiple rounds of antibiotics. I ended up losing my hair, gaining a ton of weight, having severe postpartum depression. And during that time, none of my blood work was ever tested.
Okay.
And then it just, you know, eventually went away. And then finally, a couple years later, about 4 years later, I had my second child. And during my second child, I developed, my first child, I developed gestational diabetes. And then during the second child, I developed insulin-dependent diabetes, literally the day I found out I was pregnant. And the, you know, OB endocrinologist specialist said that he had never seen that in his career, and that for sure I was going to be doomed to be an insulin-dependent diabetic for the rest of my life. And so I went through that pregnancy. After that pregnancy, after I delivered her, developed more health problems associated with hair loss, weight gain, fibromyalgia, now chronic pain with neuropathy in my hands, TMJ, depression, anxiety, ADD-like symptoms, right? That's after I delivered her. So, you know, it wasn't a surprise that these symptoms didn't completely go away. And the only test that I was able to order myself really at that time, because I'm conventionally trained, was like our typical fatigue panel, which is your TSH and your CBC. And then you tell patients like, and your CMP, complete metabolic panel, which by the way, I mean, all these tests cost probably less than in the United States, like the lab, $30 to do maybe. But then we tell people based on this very limited set, we call it the complete metabolic panel, the CMP, which is a joke. But all these labs were normal. So I was just told that I was normal. And I was sick. I was really sick. And it wasn't, you know, and this is, I delivered my second child at 33. And by the age of 36, I went into full-blown hormonal menopause with an FSH of 80. And I don't know if the units are the same in the United States as it is in England, but in the US, when it's 80, it's really high. And you are in menopause, meaning your ovaries are shut down. And so I was diagnosed with early menopause at the age of 36, fibromyalgia, severe tendonitis in my wrists and TMJ, and ADD.
Gosh. I had a similar thing. Different in terms of different diagnoses, but similar in that journey of, you know, being told like labs coming back normal, being told there was nothing wrong with me, you know, sort of sent around all different doctors, you know, all that sort of thing. And so I had that same sort of journey. And it's really difficult, right? Being told that everything is normal. It's hard when you know, because you know your own body, don't you? You know that it's not normal.
Well, I mean, you know, there are practitioners that listen to this podcast. And so, you know, how many times, as far as I was concerned, I was medical director at a family medicine clinic for a large medical group here. And, you know, in the lunchroom and, you know, in the back, how many of us are busy seeing, you know, 25 to 30 patients minimum a day. And we are all, quote unquote, I'm a fan of the cursey words. We're all bitching in the back about how I'm so sick and tired of the patient who's sick and tired. Where all the labs are normal because there's nothing we can do for these people. And they seem to be pouring into our practices and demanding, it feels like, more and more time, more and more understanding, more and more of learning and things we'd have nothing about. They were asking us about supplements, hormones, diet, lifestyle, and little do they know, going to one of the best medicals in the country, I only had 30 minutes of that during my entire 4 years of medical school training. Yeah. Your doctor has no supplement training, alternative medicine training, lifestyle, dietary training. They have none. I don't know how it is in the UK.
Yeah, exactly the same in the UK. I think somebody said, I had another doctor on, and I think she said they got 4 hours that was like in the whole degree that was diet, lifestyle.
But 30 minutes for us.
Yeah. So I think four hours is pretty good going.
And zero of that was in supplementation.
Yeah.
Plant medicine.
Yeah.
Right.
But then I always say to people, like, you know, that's okay, because it's in a way it's okay. I hope, you know, you want people to come integrated, but in a way you can't expect a doctor to go through medical school and learn everything, including all the functional medicine stuff. You know, you've obviously done years of training afterwards in functional medicine. I'm now on sort of 4 or 5 years of training in functional medicine. Yeah. But, you know, you wouldn't go to a plumber if you wanted a joinery job done. You know, it's like they are different. And I think it's okay to go and see a doctor for the conventional medicine stuff and see somebody who's done the functional medicine training for the dietary and the supplement stuff. And that is okay. It's just, I think, a shame that somewhere along the way it gets lost in translation between sort of the two. You know, there's a bit of sort of stickiness around that conventional medicine. How did you find the move from into functional medicine, coming from conventional medicine? Because yeah. I know here there's still a lot of hesitancy from some doctors, not all, it is changing, thank goodness, but from some doctors, we still get that sort of hesitancy around using things like functional medicine and there's quite a lot of resistance. Was there stigma for you moving from conventional to functional medicine, or was it different?
So this is really interesting. So great question. And one of the things that I found was, remember, in the break room, your doctors are all rolling their eyes at all the patients that are sick and tired with normal labs, until I became that patient. And that's what all my colleagues did with me. So this is the problem, is when I became the recipient of that care, I realized what shit it is, what hubris it is, and how criminal it actually really is. Because what solutions did I have at that time and my colleagues have for a patient that I became? Well, we had antidepressants, right? How much Prozac, Paxil, Lexapro did we prescribe, Zoloft did we prescribe for a patient that we became, right? Yeah. For these quote unquote normal labs and nothing's wrong with you. How many times did we tell them to go get therapy, right? How many times did we tell them to lose weight and exercise harder and eat less? How many times did we do that? And so when I received that care, I recognized that it didn't help me. I got on the birth control pills. I got on the antidepressants. I got on the gabapentin for my pain. It didn't help. It made me madder, fatter, and sicker.
Yeah. It's a sticking plaster over the top, right? It's not a cure. It's not treatment. It's just a sticking plaster over the top of it.
When you realize you're part of an enterprise where you were trained to really dismiss and poo-poo people of anything you don't know about, right?
Yeah.
I think that's criminal. I actually think that's criminal. When did healers become memorizers of algorithms, regardless of what the symptom they're presenting with, the fact that there exists thousands of other labs and other methodologies for dealing with problems? When did we get so narrow focused in our training that we're literally sitting here just like memorizing algorithms and all that? That being said, that's okay, right? That's okay, because there's a lot to learn to be a doctor in medical school. What's not okay is to think that's the only and the best way and the first way to deal with every problem. I think that's criminal. And I don't just think it. I practiced it and I received it and I almost died as a result of it. So that is why I said, when you say, why was there a stigma and all this? You know what? Stigma or not, as a patient and receiver of that care, I realized I have to do something different to save my own life.
Yeah.
Because at that point, Nicole, I had lost my job. I lost my marriage and I nearly lost my own life.
Yeah.
Well, until I didn't have a choice, being a very smart, educated, intelligent, hardworking woman and mother, until I was pressed to that point where I was at my lowest and I didn't have a choice, I didn't go outside the box. That's how much pressure it took for that to happen.
And all that time, your labs are normal, right? Generally, you know, yeah. And it's unbelievable, isn't it?
Every single lab, the only lab that wasn't normal was my FSH, which showed that I was in early menopause, which, by the way, we can go back to later, is not true. It was not true. And I can explain that more later. Based on a lie, but based on ignorance. So we can go in. That was a teaser. Because years later, what I found out was, on my own accord, was that I actually have an autoimmune disease, Hashimoto's, which is an autoimmune attack against my thyroid, which is a hormone-making organ. And I'm just going to blow the mind of a lot of people, not you for sure, but when someone has autoimmune disease, which means their immune system is busy trying to attack their thyroid, in my case, which is a hormone-making organ, what do you guys think out there is the likelihood that your immune system makes the same mistake and attacks your ovaries? Or your adrenals, or your pancreas, or your brain that makes hormones?
Yeah.
I'm going to connect the dots here and I'm going to say, why do you guys think I had diabetes during my pregnancies? Why do you guys think I was diagnosed with ADD as an adult after that? Brain hormones, anyone? Why do you guys think I went into early menopause with my ovaries seemingly shut down or dead? Well, because they were all victims of the autoimmune attack against hormone-making organs. autoimmunity isn't just about the one target that's being attacked. It's about all the other targets that look just like it that are also under attack because your immune system is making mistakes over and over and over again, hundreds if not thousands of times. So I wasn't in menopause. I was having an autoimmune disease that was aggressively attacking the hormone production, not only in my thyroid, but in my ovaries.
Yeah, all the time. It's how interconnected the body is and how you've got to look at the whole body. You've got to look at the person as an individual, but you've got to look at the body as a whole. And I'm actually, I know you've just, we'll talk about this later, but I know you've got your book out at the moment. I'm actually just in publication sort of stages of mine.
Yay!
Yeah, it's great. It's exciting. So mine's coming out in November. And but I talk a lot in that about the whole body approach, and I talk about the different parts of the body, but in each chapter I'm interconnecting how actually they link to the other chapters, the other parts of the body, and how you need to, you know, bring it all together and look at the whole body, because particularly with the autoimmune conditions, it's so important. I work a lot actually thyroid. I've been inundated with thyroid cases. It's a part of my clinic now. And I think purely, I think it is probably one of the more common of the autoimmune diseases, but I think the reason that I get so many is how poorly managed it is within the conventional medicine, because it's just a case of, you know, you get your levothyroxine and see you later. Kind of, you know, we just measure TSH and, you know, see you later. That's it. That's the only approach. And particularly if they are autoimmune thyroid conditions, which let's face it, the vast majority are.
By literature, do you know it's at least 60 to 80% of all hypothyroidism is autoimmune thyroid, and the doctor nor the patient is aware of it most of the time?
I have a box on my intake form for thyroid for people to put their thyroid diagnosis, and they always put hypo or hyperthyroid. And I have, sometimes they do actually put Hashimoto's or Graves even. And then I have another box that says, do you have autoimmune disease? And I ask the question specifically because I can't tell you how many people will write Hashimoto's or Graves and they tick no for the autoimmune box because they just don't realize that that is an autoimmune condition. They just think it's a thyroid condition.
Nicole, I think most people in the world have no clue that at least 50%, if not more, of their symptoms are because of an autoimmune disease that's either hasn't been diagnosed or will never be able to be diagnosed.
It's unbelievable. And every time I talk about this, it still shocks me now. And I kind of know it shouldn't really anymore, but it still does. It's still shocking that...
The other piece of this is the reason you and I are inundated with thyroid cases, quote unquote, is because number one, TSH isn't even the best test to judge if someone's on the right dose of thyroid medication, number one. Number two is... we actually care if someone have autoimmune disease of their thyroid or not versus the conventionally trained medical doctor. Because the conventionally trained medical doctor just says, I don't care if it's autoimmune. All I care is that I'm going to do a TSH and my job only is to adjust a dose of the medication. And for me, our job is a much bigger order. Our job is to recognize in ourselves and in our patient that they have an autoimmune disease. And why does it matter to us is because now we know the likelihood of having other targets of autoimmune attack. So we're not surprised if someone comes up with POTS. We're not surprised if they come up with a swallowing problem or food sensitivities or ADD as an adult or depression or anxiety. We're not surprised when they get other hormonal problems. We don't treat these people as super special rare zebras. We treat them as, oh, a person with multiple autoimmune targets of attack. And it makes it so much easier to look through someone with that lens. So we no longer dismiss the patient that's sick and tired of being sick and tired because they're not crazy.
Yeah.
I was not crazy, right?
No, I can't tell you the number of I went around so many doctors trying. I mean, I was 15 years getting diagnosed, so I went around a lot of doctors in that time. But I was, you know, I was told that it was, you know, it was just migraines. It was in my head. You know, maybe I was a bit stressed. You know, I got all of this. The worst, the one that I got that really irritated me was I actually had a doctor sat in front of me who said, "You're maybe just a little bit sensitive because you're a woman," and I've talked about this before, but it still infuriates me to this day. And that was his answer to it was, oh, well, maybe this is, you know, you're a woman, you're a bit more sensitive. That's probably what's going on for you. And it's like, great. Is that it? Is that the whole solution?
Well, and for me too, it's also, what is the likelihood that a woman's going to be prescribed an antidepressant versus a man? It goes all to me. I was just on another podcast and we were talking about the word hysteria and the diagnosis of hysteria in women in, you know, English, in British medical history. And what a, I'm sorry, in English, a bullshit term that really is, but we're still diagnosing women with hysteria every single day. We just call it depression, anxiety, menopause.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so true. It's so true. Right. How well integrated do you think functional medicine is in the US now? Is it something you think more people are aware of? Is it sort of common knowledge that it's an option for people, or is that still a fight that is ongoing and needs to, sort of awareness needs to be raised?
I think there's a lack of clarity in the United States of what is a functional medicine provider. And for me, coming from an MD training background, I really think that while we don't need our medical doctors to become the experts in functional medicine or natural medicine, plant medicine, holistic, alternative health, we can't expect that. But we also, as consumers, need to stop going to them hoping and thinking that that's what they're offering. That's never been their offer, right? So consumers need to understand that and need to understand these that these complex medical problems will never be solved, in a conventional medical setting. So which means then that the consumer will have to do a detective work, meaning to find out what kind of practitioner do I need? And I think labeling is becoming a big problem in the United States where, for example, like IFM will be training providers and they call them functional medicine providers, right? But providers can be any line of practice. You could be a chiropractor, an acupuncturist. You can be even a health coach who has no medical school training. You could be a naturopathic physician. I mean, and there's the whole IFM is also training a bunch of functional medicine health coaches, right? Which can't prescribe, don't understand medications. Like, I mean, there's a lot of issues with this. And so because of a lack of clear labeling of who's what and who does what, and who's credentialed for what, consumers are rightly confused. And I have these conversations with clients all the time because, you know, when they work with us, they work with our programs. One of the things that I always talk about is we teach them the skills to help them build their team because I really believe that we need a team. And one of the biggest fallacies that people believe is just find me a functional medicine provider. And I always say, for what? For what service do you need? Like, I mean, it's like medical doctors have specialties. Why don't people understand that functional medicine practitioner is just saying some sort of health practitioner may or may not be credentialed in the area of specialty you need? So we need to dig deeper, right? So for me, because I'm a family medicine MD, I see adults and children, and then I added all the holistic and alternative health training on top of it so I can deal with every single age group. But that is a super rare sliver of functional medicine practitioners. The other aspect of this is I prescribe, I understand medications. I also understand all the plant medicine. Very few functional medicine providers are actually medical doctors or naturopathic physicians in the United States that can prescribe or even understand the medications you're on.
Yeah.
So people come to us sick and they're on these medications and then they expect the holistic or functional medicine provider to be able to navigate their medical health, which most of them cannot. Right? So I think it's actually in a very state where consumers are very ignorant, the labelings are very confusing, and the problem is we are now dealing with a more and more skeptical public and a more and more number of, I call it, fraudulent, uncredentialed, fly-by-night health coaches that claim that they can solve these complex medical problems when they cannot, trying to sell supplements or programs all over the place. So honestly, the public cannot tell someone who's of the quality and experience or wisdom that you and I are at versus some health coach who literally took a 2-week course and then calls himself a health coach and now is saying, I can cure Hashimoto's. Bullshit. You can't cure anything. So I think it's a very dangerous place actually out there for the consumer because they cannot tell the diamond from trash. They really cannot.
Yeah, it is. It's the same in, obviously it's the same in the UK as it is in the USA in terms of what's regulated in terms of terms as well, you know, terms that can be used and things like that. So it does get very, it gets very messy. And I think in the UK, I think the other thing that we have probably that adds on top of that is we probably have quite a different approach to healthcare than what you have in the USA, because we've been lucky enough for so long to have the NHS, which is struggling now. It's not quite in the state that it was in, but it is struggling now. But we've been lucky to have that for so long that the mentality, I think, here is that we all have the right to free healthcare.
Same with the US, because we have insurance. It's a big barrier.
It
free healthcare is sick care. It's emergent sick care.
Yeah. It's getting people to understand that actually for acute care, that medicine, that type of medicine works really well and is very effective. And, you know, in that sort of circumstance, it's brilliant. But it's the chronic illnesses that are really being left behind within that setting and within the structure of how that works.
And the problem is, it's that's a fact, right? The United States medical system under insurance and then the UK under NHS is great for acute care.
Yeah.
And no, I don't question that whatsoever. I agree, right? But the fact is, acute care for chronic illness is sick care and disastrous.
Yeah.
And so the problem is the public doesn't realize the difference between the two. And so they think coming to a functional, even the best functional medicine's doctor's clinic or program, they think that, some people think it's just a green medicine, which is give me a green supplement instead of my pill. Some people think that's what it is. And then they also balk at the idea that the training and the delivery of functional medicine is not covered right now under the United States insurance system. And it is not. They don't want us practicing, actually. And so at what expense of our time training our youth, you know, and risk it is for us to actually develop our own businesses and to deliver this type of care, only to have people honestly spam us in, you know, and lo and behold, how do people find us? Through podcasts, social media, and yes, sometimes advertising.
Yeah.
Right? It's not dirty for functional medicine providers who are awesome and hard to find to be on social media or to advertise so you know we exist. You're welcome.
It's raising awareness. We've got to raise the profile of what functional medicine
is. We're paying to raise awareness.
Yeah.
Because nobody else is, because no one else cares, right? So, and instead, I don't know about in the UK, but in the United States, there are a lot of people who will scoff and make very disparaging comments about functional medicine doctors who are on social media doing teaching and podcasts and free education and sharing our knowledge and our wisdom that we paid for, we earned for that, you know, with the public. It's like, how dare you charge for your services? We get this all the time. What do you mean? Because, you know, I've paid over $1 million for my education and training over the last 27 years of my career for this.
Yeah.
How dare I really be able to turn around POTS, mast cell, and histamine? How dare I offer these services? Really? Why? Well, I do dare. You know what? I do dare. And you know what? Kiss my ass. Because that's what it took to save my life.
Yeah.
I am a smart, intelligent woman and entrepreneur. And that's what it took to save my own life. And I'm here to do that for anyone else who respects that and needs that. Right?
Yeah. No, it did the same for me. It turned, you know, I was, I think I said to you before we started this podcast, I was 15 years getting diagnosed. And in that time, just not finding the answers. I didn't know about functional medicine then. It was only when I found functional medicine that I started to, which was prior to diagnosis, that was when I started to get better. Finding nutrition, finding functional medicine, that I started to get better. Outside of the conventional medicine sort of side of things, I carried on with it in the background, still didn't get anywhere, still didn't really get diagnosis. And then, but it was the functional medicine that in the end got me on the right track, even with the conventional medicine. And I don't actually take any meds. I haven't gone down the conventional route now. I I've done it all through the functional side, but, and I'm not saying that's the right thing for everybody. Some people with certain conditions, they need the meds and things like that. And that's absolutely fine.
Combination. I'm all for it. All the tools. I'm not against meds or conventional medicine.
No, exactly. Exactly the same. It's for me, I didn't need it at the moment. And that's absolutely fine. If I need it in the future, maybe it's a different argument. Right now, I don't need it and I don't use it. But it was functional medicine for me that turned things around. It helped me to get to diagnosis. It was the functional medicine that started getting me better. And that's why I really went into doing this. Originally, I was doing neuroscience at university. When I became ill, I was studying neuroscience. I get so many people coming to me who are having that struggle with diagnostic criteria. And in conventional medicine, there is very much this sort of, you've got to tick the boxes, right? You've got to be in the box and you've got to tick the boxes. And if you don't quite fit into the box, or maybe you tick all the boxes apart from maybe one, or something, whatever it might be, you don't get that diagnosis. Now, how do you feel? Obviously, you Kate, coming from that background, the conventional medicine of getting everybody a diagnosis, how do you feel about diagnoses now? How important is it for you that people get a diagnosis, or having moved into that sort of functional medicine world, feel that it's less important?
I actually feel really important that the causes are more important than the diagnosis.
Yeah, same.
The focus is wrong. It's on the wrong end. It's on the back end. It's like saying, the cure for cancer. It's like we're sitting here surveilling, waiting until someone has cancer and then say, aha, now we have something to help you. And for me, I have 1,000 tools at the other end where I'm like, how about on your watch and my watch, you never get the diagnosis? Mm-hmm. Which one's worth more to you? And yet we spend all our healthcare dollars on the other end, diagnosing someone with cancer and saying, aha, now we can help you. And then we put them on a couple million dollars of chemotherapy every year. Major business, right? So for me, one of the most important things is I actually say out of social media, and maybe I've even said it multiple times in the book, the diagnosis doesn't even matter to me.
Yeah.
Because the only reason to me that a diagnosis even existed was, to put people down certain algorithms for either to qualify for certain medications, surgeries, or some sort of expensive medical chemotherapy type treatment type thing. It was made as almost a scientific algorithm to see which pathway, a sorting line. That's really what a diagnosis is for practical reasons. That's how it came about, right? But that being said, I'm going to go back to a point that I made earlier. In my estimation, I think 98% of autoimmune diseases, we haven't even been touched the surface of being able to diagnose yet. And the reason is, I'm going to give and we talked about the thyroid, and for the casual listener, thinking about the thyroid gland that's in your neck, that's the shape of a little butterfly, size of a little butterfly or smaller. There are 6,000 different targets of autoimmune attack in the thyroid alone. So what that means is if you go to a doctor and you are lucky enough to try to get testing for autoimmunity, the most number of tests they run in the standard laboratory is 3 targets. And if you go to a specialty laboratory, maybe 15 targets at most. Which means that 8,885 other targets have never been tested. And yet doctors will, number one, not even test those 3 targets. Number two, if they're negative, tell a patient that they don't have autoimmune disease. And number three, what's the likelihood with a person with low thyroid, for example, they actually have autoimmune disease? We already know it's at least 60 to 80% chances autoimmune attack by data, by research. So it tells you that the cards are really stacked against people even getting a diagnosis now that we are understanding with technology that there is millions and millions and millions of different targets of autoimmune attack in our body. And we have seen a 7 to 11-fold jump in increase over the last 60 years in autoimmune disease in diagnosis. Imagine
what that is undiagnosed. Yeah.
Right. So for me, I don't even think the diagnosis matter, because I know as a matter of fact that 99% of all chronic diseases have some basis in autoimmunity, if not the major basis in autoimmune attack against some part of the body, something, right? So for me, I'm so much more interested in, and the symptoms they come in, the stories they come in, it's the same all the time. I have a diagnosis of this problem, but I have these other symptoms and now people think I'm crazy. Or I don't have any diagnosis, I have all these symptoms and now people still think I'm crazy. So it's the same story that I had. I mean, think about it, Nicole. I mean, it took me at least 8 to 10 years from the time I had the onset of symptoms after the birth of my first child to the time I finally self-diagnosed myself with Hashimoto's was at least 10 years. 10 years as a medical doctor to diagnose myself with an autoimmune disease. And I was lucky because my antibodies, those two tests came back, one of them came back a little bit high.
Yeah.
And I was told, you don't even have it. Wrong, right? So it took that long for a medical doctor to get diagnosed. But the thing is, what I think is brilliant at looking at the root causes, all chronic disease have a similar pool of root causes in groupings. And so when there's a systematic method of going around looking and evaluating a patient and all those root causes, the diagnosis doesn't matter because the naming of it doesn't matter. For me, I'd rather stop it. Do you want to name it? Do you want to stop it? I'm here to stop it. And then that's my other catchphrase is I'm like, we're here to kick ass, take names and chew bubble gum here. I'm not here to tick your boxes. I'm here to stop this problem. And the more difficult it is, the more I laugh at danger. I love it. Right. And to me, that's my approach to functional root cause medicine. The diagnosis doesn't matter to me at all, at all. But the understanding of the medical aspects of you having it, the medical understanding of you taking medications for it, the medical understanding to understand there's even deeper root causes we need to go down into, that's what's missing. That knowledge, that wisdom, that approach, that framework.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't agree more with you on that, I think. And I think it's really important. And people do get very caught up, I think, in the diagnosis because it's the way healthcare has always been is, you know, you go to the doctor, you get diagnosis, and people have got very caught up in it. But I completely agree with you. I think 100%, it doesn't really matter. The other thing I wanted to talk to you about was to talk about POTS. So postural static tachycardia syndrome for people who...
Another mystery illness.
One of these. So I actually, it was one of the things that I went down the road of, is this what she's got? And going down a diagnosis of. And honestly, finding a doctor who understood POTS, what it was, what could be done to help it, was almost impossible here in the UK. I found so many cardiologists, I can't even tell you. I think, like, if anybody needs a recommendation for cardiologists, I think I know every single one in the area and probably most of them in London as well. I've seen so many of them. But
there's only one I recommend, just so you know, in England and probably in the world, if you're going to see a cardiologist.
Yeah. And I saw so many. And I ended up traveling to London to go and try and see doctors there. I got under a cardiologist. I actually got under a very good one there, an excellent one, who was very knowledgeable, knew about POTS. And he was the one actually that got me onto the right track for getting diagnosed. But with the POTS, I get a lot of people that come to me that think they have it through having done their own research rather than through doctors telling them they have. But it's classed as a very rare disorder. It's one of those that it's not rare. It's not. It's really not rare. This is exactly what I was going to ask you. I see it in clinic all the time.
Yeah.
So I don't view it as rare, but it is classed as, you know, they say it's a rare. It's, you know, this rare disorder. And I really don't see it that way. But what are your views on POTS and its link to autoimmunity? Because in my opinion, there's definitely, you know, there's this link, but it just doesn't get seen that way, does it?
So let's define for our audience what POTS is. Postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. And all the words describe symptoms, and they all sound cardiovascular, meaning blood vessel and heart related, which means that orthostatic, anytime you do positional changes, tachycardia, your heart runs fast. So it basically, you think positional changes, dizziness, nausea, fainting, heart racing fast, blood pressure going up and down. That's what it is. It's just a description of a set of symptoms. And when I describe those symptoms, how many people in the audience right now are like, oh my gosh, I've had those symptoms. Right? So it's also in the realm of a larger classification of diagnoses related to what we call dysautonomia. And dysautonomia is an understanding that there's a nervous system in your body that's called parasympathetic and sympathetic. So fight or flight is a sympathetic, parasympathetic is the calm and rest. Okay. And the two of them are always balancing each other out. But when they're not working to balance each other well, you can get a overactive, let's say, fight or flight, then what happens then is, which means the strength of your parasympathetic is low, then what you get will be, woo, fight or flight means your blood pressure changes, your heart rate changes, your muscle tone changes, it shuts down digestion, and it says fight or flight, right? So you can understand how in this nervous system disorder called dysautonomia, we can have something like POTS underneath it where it's like, oh, it's with positional changes that happens. So it's in that same family, right? And so the problem is we have designated, because the symptoms seem to be related to blood pressure, heart, we have designated it's a cardiologist issue, that it's a heart issue. It is not a heart issue.
Nope.
It is not a heart issue. We're sending people to the wrong doctors. We are throwing cardiologists under the bus because they are poorly equipped to deal with this problem because, you know, they do a test called the tilt table test, which, you know, in the best of worlds, if you throw up during it, then you'll qualify for a diagnosis. And if you don't, maybe you won't, right? So it's not a great test for this. And there's a spectrum of people with POTS or dysautonomia. And then we're going to add to complication here. Now we had COVID or the big C, and now we have over 65, 80 million people worldwide diagnosed with long haul who display, go look at the symptoms for long haul, okay, everybody? And it is fatigue, brain fog, you know, dizziness, nausea, blood pressure changes, intolerability to heat or cold. Like that's, you know what long haul is? It's POTS.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's like 80 million people diagnosed with long haul. Do you know how many do you know how underdiagnosed long haul is? How many people do you know with long haul that didn't even go to a doctor to get a diagnosis? So that number may be even a third. So let's 240 million people with some symptom of long haul. And the vast majority of these people have symptoms that are identical and very similar to POTS or dysautonomia. So it raises the question for me is multiple, and we're going to go back to this autoimmune. Is it linked to autoimmune? 100%, absolutely. But what autoimmune is, it's a disturbance in your immune system. It's some sort of irregularity in your immune system. Your immune system is there to kill germs or fight cancer in your body, right? But then now your immune system makes a mistake and starts to kill you, right? Attack you. So if somebody has the genetics for that dysregulation of their immune system, meaning their immune system makes mistakes all the time, then what's the likelihood, right, that, you know, somebody who has any sort of different types of autoimmune target makes targets out of your nervous system, your parasympathetic or sympathetic nervous system, makes targets, right, out of all sorts of different places that will cause these sets of symptoms. And it's 100%. And then let's think through the COVID question, long haul, and why I specialize in long haul and POTS as well is you got a super virus here, a super infectious agent, and it incorporates into the DNA of multiple parts of your body. We know the big C and long haul doesn't just attack the lungs and respiratory. We already know it likes the heart. It likes the gut. And it likes, you know, it has a lot of also mental health symptoms. And so what we're seeing here is, can an infectious organism hit susceptible individuals who already have an immune system that's dysregulated and then turn it into a super weapon and create these same symptoms? And the answer is yes, yes, and hell yes. And that's why with long haul, you don't just see POTS. You see people who have known autoimmune diseases get way worse with flares, or they get a new diagnosis of some sort of autoimmune disease after they've had the big C. Therefore, I just want you guys to be aware that there's a total link where infectious organisms, we know for a fact, can trigger an already dysregulated immune system, i.e. those with autoimmune disease, to produce a flare or new diagnosis of any autoimmune disease. And this is why we also see a huge increase in diagnosis and presentation of people with POTS and dysautonomia because of actually COVID and long haul.
And it's no different. We've always known that viruses can do this. For me, the trigger was Epstein-Barr virus. That was the thing that I had that triggered
correct
all my health issues. That's where it started. You know, if I go back and do my, you know, the timeline, if we're doing functional medicine, I go back and I do my timeline, that's where things went wrong. And then, you know, it's not new to us that viruses can do this and act as the trigger.
That's correct. And this is why for me too, I, you know, when we're talking about cardiologists here, I have to do a shout out to the YouTube channel, Your Cardiology, and Dr. Sanjay Gupta, where, you know, as a cardiologist in the UK, right, he's going against his profession, because what do cardiologists do? They try to make the diagnosis. And if they can, they throw a medication at you. And the medication for those of you listening who are not doctors is typically what we call beta blockers. And beta blockers are designed to slow the heart. Now, remember, these people still have low blood pressure swings causing them to be dizzy. Now, you give them a blood pressure medication that slows their heart. Guess what it does? Lower their blood pressure and make them even more dizzy and worse. What was your experience with medications with?
That is exactly. So I was given, they gave me beta blockers to lower my heart rate, which dropped my blood pressure. They gave me midodrine to raise my blood pressure, which I actually couldn't take because of the side effects. I couldn't tolerate that one. So the beta blockers were lowering my heart rate, lowering my blood pressure. The midodrine was supposed to be pushing my blood pressure back up. But it all just felt very counterproductive. But they really didn't. They didn't have anything else. And if I said to them, "Well, what else? What else can we do about this?" It was not. That's it. That's the drugs that we give. And
well, here's the interesting thing. So Dr. Gupta says, and he's all over YouTube. You guys want to take a look at it? Is he talks about how IV hydration was saline. Is actually, he's seen it like weekly, regular IV hydration is helpful for some of the sickest symptoms with symptoms. He's not saying he's curing POTS, the underlying causes or the autoimmunity, but he's saying for some reason, it's not these cardiac medications, it's IV hydration with saline. And I am going to tie this back to my book, but also back to a lot of, I do so much for POTS and there's a hidden holy grail here. Is that what I have found is people with POTS and people with autoimmune disease have an inherent brokenness in their genetic code that causes them to have broken parts of their digestion. So what's going on here is that they were born with digestive issues. Some of the steps are broken, but later on, they're actually more and more broken steps, and infection can also break more steps. And what happens is these people are very unable to digest and absorb. So what you're finding is there's a lot of fat, protein, vitamin, mineral deficiencies, electrolyte deficiencies in these individuals. It's autoimmunity linked to digestive problems that when you hydrate with saline, it's salt in the water straight into your blood. You're actually replacing the electrolyte that's inherently broken in these people as they have a weakness in absorbing vitamins, minerals, electrolytes, right?
That's the other thing that they did with me. They gave me sodium tablets. That's the other treatment that they gave me.
But it doesn't go into and stay in your blood flow. That's the problem. Giving just salt tablets doesn't work. I mean, it helps a little bit, but what Dr. Gupta found was when he gave it in a saline IV straight into the blood, it stays in the body for days versus trying to eat it and getting it absorbed. It doesn't. So that's a symptomatic treatment that worked, and it makes total sense to me because I understand the link between autoimmunity and digestive problems. I understand the link between long haul and digestive problems. I understand the link of these people also with food sensitivities and other digestive assaults on them. So there's a whole lot of other pieces to underneath this, but I can say that it does not belong with the cardiologists. And people like Dr. Gupta is talking about replacing electrolyte IV-wise as symptomatic treatment, I think is spot on. And I think you're the most spot on with understanding this is an autoimmune, dysregulated immune system problem, which there are additional assaults that build on top of it that triggers these types of symptoms and diagnosis. And this is where I don't care about the diagnosis. I don't care if it's long haul, POTS, dysautonomia, or you're just dizzy. I don't care. I care we can fix it. And I can fix it. That's things. It is a completely fixable problem. Nicole, I have people within 2 to 4 weeks with 50% of their symptoms resolved. I have people on interviews. I mean, we're interviewing people post, you know, long haul, post-POTS. That I had Dana who said within the first 2 weeks, 80% of her POTS symptoms were gone. Right? This is a solvable problem. And that's the piece I'm like, and then, you know, we go back to how dare you show this on social media or whatever, or how dare you charge for your services or this or that or whatever. And I'm just going to go back to the point is, would you want to know that your problem is completely solvable?
Yeah. And I think that's it. So many people come to me and they say with POTS, like, well, but it's there's nothing you can do for it, is there?
Not true.
And they've been told so many times that there is nothing else that can be done, that they just think they've got to live with it and accept it. And
well, you and I almost believe this lie for our own illnesses.
Yeah.
And it's literally for me, it was the threat of death. You know, the threat of passing this to my children that I was like, I got to do something different, right? So that's what it takes for practitioners like you and I. I don't think that your regular medical doctor is going to say, I'm going to go train to be a functional medicine doctor. There's just too much indoctrination. There's also very clear lines of what their job and their role is. And it's also easy. It's easy to do that job.
Yeah.
I can be a pill sorter, an algorithm sorter any day. I can work in a factory any day. But that's not what it took to save my life. And that's not what it takes to save the lives of my patients, right? My clients that I work with. So now that I know different and all the knowledge and training and investment I've made into knowing this, I'm here to like really sing it from the top of the mountaintop, just like you are, to say, hey, these are completely solvable problems. If you hit it early enough, hard enough, with a methodology and a system to look at what's causing these problems.
Yeah.
And that's why in the book, when you go through like 8 out of the box ways to transform your health, I literally go through and tick the root causes that are underneath all of these chronic disease problems. And that's exactly how I solve every single one of these cases. And I love cracking cases.
Yeah. For me, it was starting. So I found nutrition before I found the functional medicine. So for me, it was working on the gut health stuff. That was the first thing that it's not the only thing that I did, but it was the first thing that I did for myself outside of conventional medicine that started to get me seeing results and realizing that there was another way forward, that there was more that could be done outside of conventional medicine that I could start to heal. So it was that sort of that digestion piece was the first port of call for me, because I found a nutritionist before I found functional medicine. So that's just as it happened. That was the sort of the way that it worked for me. But I think people have just got to really understand that there is this alternative option there. And I think that's the difficulty, is that people are not always aware that there is this, you know, this other choice. And actually that's something that I loved in your book. In the, you know, I know you've just mentioned it there, but in the first chapter, you've called it's leading with curiosity, isn't it, that you've called it. And I always teach my patients to advocate for themselves. That's it. You've got to advocate for yourself. And I think it's so important. And I've actually written another one of the quotes down from it here. You wrote, the quality of life is defined by the quality of the questions we ask. So learn to ask better and better questions. And I think that's brilliant.
To better and better people.
Yeah. And I just think it's just so true. And I love that first chapter of leading, that idea of leading with curiosity. I think it's a brilliant, mm-hmm. brilliant way to start the book. But I just think that's a brilliant quote. I love it.
And Nicole, they trained the curiosity out of doctors. We're factory workers.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a difficult to solve diagnosis or lack of diagnosis, you really don't want to go to a factory. You really don't want to, like, seriously, like, and you don't want to go to people that are assemblies, like the sorters, right? Medical doctors are really good sorters. They're not here to find, they're not gardeners. Like, seriously, you don't want to go to a sorter to deal with these chronic health problems. You want to go someone who's a gardener, like really looking at an organic garden and saying, like, why is this plant showing up this way? What's happening? What soil? What nutrients? What's going in? What's the problem? You're really looking for a gardener.
Yeah. One of my clients said to me when I finished working with him, and he said, you're like a health detective.
Yes.
And I love that. I was just, that is such a great quote to get from a client, but it's true. It's like, it is that you've really got to dig in and figure things out. And it takes time. It's not an overnight, you know, it's not necessarily it's not an overnight thing. It's not a magic pill that maybe people want from, you know, go to the doctors and get a pill and that's it done. It's going to take a bit of work. People make changes.
But I took the magic pills and they weren't magic.
Exactly.
I prescribed the magic pills. They're not magic. And in fact, many of them are toxic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Many of them cover up the real problem. And I got a bigger problem a couple of years later. So that there is no magic pill.
Exactly.
That's yeah. the truth.
I think it was in, I've got your book here. I think it was in lesson 7, I think it was. Yeah, here. So you're talking about creating experiences for your health transformation. Tell us a little bit about this. I think it's a really interesting concept. So tell us a little bit about sort of that lesson that's in the book.
Yeah, I understood the limits of clinical medicine one-on-one care very early, because I owned my own. Not only was I a family practitioner, I later opened up my own functional medicine clinic with 12 practitioners and with no 8 practitioners and 12,000 patients in the clinic. But there were so much limitations with it, one-on-one medicine. I think part of it was that I knew in order to be a health detective, we have to also enroll our patient as our collaborator. We need a Watson to our Sherlock. And until you have a patient who's the Watson to your Sherlock, Sherlock can't do jack by himself. I mean, to me, we do so much more faster. and more effectively when we do it together. So what I found was that in a clinical setting, I cannot educate my patients to come up to the level of being a Watson. And so I decided to do that online. And because I realized that it's not in, because you know what? Actually, delivering medical care is one way. We tell people. And as parents, we know how effective do you think it is to tell someone what to do, your child what to do? Not effective at all. Whereas when your child, when you create experiences, whether it's team sports or whatever it is with your child, when you create experiences for people, they remember how things made them feel. They remember like the other people involved, the stories, I mean, versus like trying to memorize or being told something. So I create learning, educational medical experiences for the lay public and practitioners.
Yeah.
So we certify practitioners to teach from one to many. We train patients, anybody, to come to us and say, hey, Dr. Maggie, I want to solve my POTS. I want to solve my mast cell. I want to solve my autoimmune disease. I say, cool. Join my program. We're actually going to be teaching you through experiences. That's your own laboratory blood work. You know, that's your own hormone results. That's your own results. Then you take it. And then we teach didactics. So there's online learning modules for them to learn on their own time. Because there are people that are attracted to this are people who are led by curiosity. They're asking questions. People who are listening to this podcast are asking those questions. So they want to learn. I want to work with, honestly, the eager and hungry learner, the curious, open learner, right? So they come in, not only do they get their results, but they're learning with these online modules. And then they come in and they play full out with us. We have master practitioners like myself and others who are sitting here going over results with them and asking the better questions of them as they ask of us. So there'll be some people, you know, when they first start, be like, tell me what I'm supposed to do with my results, which is what I call give me the magic pill question. And I come back and it's very Socratic where I'm like, okay, everybody, we're in a Zoom together. We're learning together. What pattern do you see in these results that your regular practitioner would never see? And they're like, holy cow, there's a digestion problem there. Somebody else says, oh my God, it's low stomach acid. Somebody else says, oh, there's food sensitivities. Someone else says, there's an infectious pattern here in this person's history and in these results. They're starting to see things I see because I'm a master pattern seeker. So Sherlock sees patterns in these crime scenes, right? Oh, that's what we do. But you know what? I'm teaching practitioners and regular people how to do that. And that's a skill I'm teaching. Go to a crime scene, see the patterns, see things other people don't see, and solve the case. That's what we're doing. We're teaching that skill to each individual. And the funny thing is they're not only just seeing their own case and their own labs being solved, they see it in other people in other age groups all in the program with various different types of symptoms. And people seem to, sometimes people come and say, I have lichen sclerosis. Can you solve that problem? Well, yeah, but it's actually a bigger autoimmune issue with multiple things. So they never think coming in that the kid with ulcerative colitis is going to teach them something. Yeah. But then the kid with ulcerative colitis and their parents going through the results blows their mind because the person with lichen realize, oh, holy crap. I never thought that gluten had that effect and it caused my recurrent urinary tract infections like this kid has. So that's what experiential learning is. We're learning from our own experience, but also from the collective experience of the other people that are in our community together at the same time. So that I call it 10X learning. 10X learning. So that's what I mean by experiential learning and creating experiences. And that's how I teach skills. I'm not here just to solve your POTS. I'm here to have a bigger order. I'm going to teach you the skills to learn how to solve your POTS and probably 90% of the chronic diseases that you see out there in your friends, family, and loved ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. And I think Boom. It's, I think being able to I actually get quite a lot of resistance, I think, around people I think when people first get in touch, they're like, I want one-to-one. Yeah. Because I think I don't know whether it's just because maybe that's the standard, isn't it? You go and see a doctor, it's one-to-one. So I think maybe it's just that. I don't know. Maybe it's ingrained in us. But a lot of people want sort of come asking for that. That's the thing that they want. It's only when you start talking to them. I have a program as well. And it's only when you start talking to them about the program and actually the benefits that they can get from a program that you can sort of see them start to think, maybe this is something that could work for me and I could consider. And, you know, it's a different mindset, I guess, around healthcare, isn't it? We're so used to healthcare being one-on-one.
Well, it's about leading with curiosity again, right? For me, if one-on-one worked for you, keep going.
Yeah.
Okay. For me, who owned a functional medicine clinic, if one on one worked for me, which it did financially, the clinic was very successful, but I didn't see the outcomes and the results and the change and skill set in these people at all whatsoever. I just saw a dependency model, which is the person comes to the doctor, I'm dependent on you, tell me what to do, go away, come back 6 weeks later, tell me more. There's nothing independently happening here in this individual to this, the client, the patient isn't growing and changing. They can't solve their own problems in between. So they're always going to be dependent on finding the next practitioner, the best one for this. And so what I, for me, I love the fact that what I did was, you know, when I started my online programs, it was what I call a side hustle because I was really frustrated with working in a clinic setting and not seeing outcomes in people in a quick enough or a permanent enough way. So I did as an experiment, I'm going to start an online program where I provide this education, provide this in a group, and I invited people to join, and people did, you know, okay, it stunned me, but people got results quicker, bigger, that were permanent, that I had never seen in a clinical setting in my 27-year career at this point. Never. And I was able to tackle and end severe life-threatening diagnoses that I never did in clinic. And that's when I realized was like, without educating the people, without a mechanism and a system for educating the clients themselves, they never get these permanent results. And the rate of change is also really slow. I'm going to ask you this. How many times have you seen a patient come back to you to deal with SIBO over and over and over again? Not even with you, but with other doctors. SIBO is small intestinal bowel overgrowth, bacterial overgrowth. And so like, there's people in your audience who've dealt with SIBO or Candida for 10 years plus. That's not even the real problem, right? But that's not even the problem. That's not the problem. The problem is you have a terrible environment in your gut with your immune system there, and that needs to be fixed. That's the real problem. It's the immune system. And so, but yet they go through these practitioners in these clinics for the 10th time for the 10th year at great expense, you know, and lost wages and all this stuff.
Running like, you know, a SIBO protocol and, you know, and what have you. And
one-on-one functional medicine is still very limited in its ability to educate and teach skills.
Yeah.
And that's why it's still green medicine in so many ways. And it's a model of dependency still. Whereas an educational experience model is a model for independence, bigger, faster, and more permanent results for impossible to treat diagnosis.
Yeah.
And think about it, for easy to treat diagnosis, then it's a walk in the park. So when someone comes to me and says, I have lichen, ulcerative colitis, and Crohn's, and I was hospitalized this year and I almost died, I go, okay, well, you're on a scale of 0 to 10, 10 being the hardest case I deal with, you're like a level 3 in difficulty. We got this. And I say that with confidence because we have a model that actually can, you know, deal with really complex and difficult or impossible to treat diagnosis. And it's an educational one.
Yeah.
Right. And that doesn't mean I don't do any one-on-one, right? We are doing actually in this experiential model, we're doing one-on-one skills teaching and pattern recognition. They're never getting that anywhere. I call it one-on-one exploded. Like, how about one-on-one beyond, one-on-one limitless?
Yeah.
This is why the cover of my book, The Letter 8, is an infinity sign.
Oh, yeah. I have an infinity sign in the other way, not as an 8, the other way on its side it's one of the things in my book.
Yeah. It's one-on-one unlimited is what an educational model is. And there are all different degrees of one-on-one that we're doing will blow people's mind, you know?
It's so important. I think it's so important with your own health to, that's what got me, that's before I trained in this, that's what got me better was learning about my health, being able to read my body, being able to read results. That's how I got myself better. And it is about educating yourself. And also autoimmunity. You know, there are times with autoimmunity where you may feel like you're starting to have a bit of a flare-up or something like that. If you then don't know what to do at that point, you're back then to square one. I've got to go and find a practitioner. I need to go and work with somebody. I've got to, you know, start again. If you've got those tools and you're educated and you know what to do, you're just going to implement them straight away, you know, dampen that straight down and get on top of everything. And
these people are smart. They know how to cut through the noise and find the diamond right away.
Yeah.
Right? You can tell I'm watching Bridgerton right now. like the key is, how do we get to the diamond faster? Not only do you don't have to know how to do everything, but if you have the discernment of Queen Charlotte or Lady Whistledown, right? If you can tell who the diamond is faster, you're able to build your team faster, your functional medicine team around you faster. You stop kissing a lot of frogs. You can tell the diamond from the fake, right? So that's the thing, is I really respect a whole lot of functional medicine providers there. But at the same time, I really want everybody to have discernment about, are they trained in the subspecialty of functional medicine that you have a particular problem in or that you need services in, right? So, and that makes it so hard to find. Oh, I just need a functional medicine provider. Wrong. I need a provider who understands how to test my hormones, how to read my hormones, who understands the patterns of hormones. How about one who can teach me what those patterns are? How about maybe I need to learn how to test my hormones, understand those patterns are? And then what are the 10,000 tools that I can use to balance my hormones? You know, which is what we do in my Hormone Masterclass, one of our programs. So the thing is, people think looking out there, I just need to find a doctor who's a hormone specialist. Wrong. Hormone specialists out there are pellet pushers. Most of them don't know anything about how to balance hormones. What we need is hormone balance, not pellet pushers. But people don't understand the difference between the two, and that's a whole other topic.
Yeah. If someone is really wanting to start out on this journey, or maybe they're just exhausted with that the conventional route, or being told that the labs are normal, or you know, whatever, we've talked about lots of these sort of journeys today. If they're wanting to get started, what would be your sort of top tips for somebody getting started on this road? What questions should they be asking? You know, what steps would you suggest they go out and do today if they want to get started on this road?
Number one, I'm going to gift everyone in your audience my book. So it's 8outofthebox.com with the number 8. Because remember, that's the infinity sign.
We'll link it below the episode so everybody can grab that.
Literally is 8outofthebox.com. The reason I want you to actually get the book, whether it's a download, and in England, I believe we don't do international ship for the hard copy, but you can get the download. So go to 8outofthebox.com. If you're international, you can choose to get the digital copy. And if you're in the States, you can get the hard copy. And the reason I do that is because the first and last chapters are really good, because the first chapter is really good because it's leading with curiosity. I outline actually like the 30 questions you should be asking of yourself and of providers to lead your health and your life with curiosity. So rather than belabor the point, I'm like, download the questions by downloading, getting the book. Okay. Whether hard copy or download, go to the website. I would say number one, get the book because I've collected those questions for you. Okay. Number one. Number two, my YouTube channel, Maggie UMD. It's great because I talk about every single one of these subjects and I'm educating. What you heard today is one 10,000th of the content that I have taught over the last 10 years on my YouTube channel. So think of going to my YouTube channel and just research POTS, dysautonomia, hormone balance, digestion, whatever the thing is, or even how to find a doctor. Like, I've talked about all these subjects and it is available online free. Go to my YouTube channel. And you can be in any country, just go find my YouTube channel, Maggie UMD, right? And then I also have a Facebook group that's international as well. It's called Transform Your Health Naturally. So you could also go head over and join the group. And then my website is drmaggieu.com. So you can go over to my website. You can also, on my website, book a chat with our team. The best thing to do is, if you're interested in learning programs, one-on-one to infinity, you know, solving these impossible self diagnoses, they can always go to my website and book a chat with us. They can chat actually on with our team right on their computer. And they can also book a telephone call with us internationally. We work with patients globally. So the cool thing about working online for me is that I can touch everybody, and we have literally patients. We've had patients currently from 35 different countries.
Yeah.
That we've worked with. Go beyond borders. If you leave with cold curiosity, go beyond borders.
Yeah, that's actually one thing that I'm grateful to COVID for. Not that I love COVID much at all, but one of the things that it did do was it forced me to take everything online. And that meant that, you know, you can start helping people globally. You're not tied to your local. That was amazing. So that's been a real experience. I've loved that.
We tripled our enrollments into our programs during COVID. And the reason was I was already online. But when I first went online, people thought I was crazy.
Yeah.
Nicole, like my colleagues thought I was crazy. My patients thought I was crazy. And the interesting thing is, just so you guys know a little history here, 6 months I started the online programs and the Transform Company that delivers online programs and supplementation. 6 months after, it was so successful in terms of outcomes, word of mouth, referrals, and enrollments, I closed my clinic.
Yeah, which is amazing, isn't it? When you think of it like that.
I don't run a functional medicine physical clinic anymore because I know for a fact what I do here is so much more powerful in getting those outcomes. So I closed it.
Yeah, I love that. So we will link everything that you've just mentioned from the book. And thank you for gifting that. That's brilliant. But we'll link everything, the gift, the book, the Facebook page, group, and your website, everything, your YouTube channel. We'll get everything linked below the episode so that people can find those really easily. And I really want to thank you so much for joining me today. It's been great to have you on and to chat to you. And we'll make sure that everybody can get all of that information if they want to learn more from you and from your team as well.
Pleasure being here. Thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Good Health Podcast. Do share the episode with anyone who you think it may benefit or who may enjoy it. And help me spread the word by rating the episode or leaving a review. If you want more, you can find other episodes in the series on your podcast app or sign up to my free newsletter. Not only will you get information on new episodes launching, but we cover lots of health topics with the Ask Nicole section where you can send in your questions, my favorite recipes, my favorite products, tips and tricks to help you on the road to good health, and much more. You can sign up free of charge at nicolegoodhealth.com/newsletter, also linked below. I hope you have a lovely week. Don't forget to hit subscribe, and I'll see you next time.